And thank you for joining us. Welcome to The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z. This is Ellen Kamai, The Natural Nurse. And as always, I'm wishing you the best. And today we're doing a special show because those of you who listen to The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z know that I'm a host on this show and Dr. Eugene Zamperl, and we co-host the show. But today we have a special edition because we're going to be on together and we'll kind of be each other's guests. So let's tell the folks, Dr. Z, a little bit about what we both do because, you know, we don't talk about ourselves on the show. We're always talking about our guests. So thanks for joining in today.
Yeah, nice to hear you. It's great to be on with you.
I thought it would be great if we kind of introduce each other a little bit and then talk about some of the exciting up-and-coming events that we have going on. You know, we have that big lecture October 6th that we're both participating in, which is a CEU seminar on evidence-based natural therapies at University of Bridgeport, so we can talk about that. We have our Chinatown Herb Walk coming up in New York City. That's October 21st. And then we have our Jamaica trip happening, which is also an accredited course through Stony Brook University, and that's coming up next March. So, you know, that's good. And I want to tell people a little bit about you because, you know, we've been partners a lot of years, Dr. Z. And for those of you who are listening in, you may know that Dr. Z is a very well-known author of several books. In fact, we've co-authored those books together, and they include Arthritis, The Alternative Medicine Definitive Guide, and Cycles of Life, Herbs for Women. And we have the Natural Medicine Chest. So that's a good thing for people to know about. And you can find those books out on our website. You can find it out at naturalnurse.com under books. And Dr. Zamperl is also a professor at University of Bridgeport in the Department of Naturopathic Medicine. And Dr. Z, why don't you share the fact that you were actually instrumental in creating that excellent university from its inception?
Well, thank you. Yeah, I mean, many, many years ago, a group of, well, you know, it's interesting. We even go back way before that when I was in naturopathic medical school. I was reading through my practice management kind of like goals. You know, we like to write goals, myself and Dr. Kamai. Hopefully you do too, listeners, because they're very important. They keep you kind of on a path towards where you need to go in life. You may not know the way that you are going to travel or the exact path that you'll take, but hopefully you'll reach that destination and enjoy the process along the way. So, you know, I was going back through those notes, actually, Ellen, before I pitched them out, and it said one of my goals was to found a naturopathic school on the East Coast and also to start several radio programs on the East Coast and write books and things like that. All of those things we've done, which is really great. But back then we wanted to form a school, myself and a board of other naturopathic doctors. And so we started looking at different possibilities. And independently of us, Dr. Jim Sensenig, who's also a well-known naturopathic doctor, had approached the University of Bridgeport because they were interested in starting like an alternative medical program and be like a hub of alternative medicine on the East Coast. That was one of their goals. And so a group of us looked into this, and I joined forces with the president of the university, who, you know, had the resources for such a program but really didn't know the first thing about starting this type of a medical program. He didn't understand what this type of medicine actually was and what the educational requirements are, that it indeed was an accredited field of science, and also wanted a handle on what the clinical training was going to be for doctors in naturopathic medicine.
And it was very exciting because this is actually the first time that this has been available for many decades, because natural medicine was the medicine of choice. Even New York was known as a homeopathic and had a naturopathic school also years ago. And yeah. Then they all disappeared. So you really brought it back to the East Coast.
Yeah, me and a couple other hardworking people were definitely instrumental. And then, unfortunately, the first dean left and kind of left the program in a, let's say, emergency, the sky is falling type of situation. And so they called me in to get it going again. And because they had people that were already matriculated in their second year and wanted to get into clinic, but the clinic wasn't totally built. And so there was a lot of obstacles, which through myself and a few other very dedicated people, we managed to figure out. And then eventually we had to go for full accreditation, which I was on the very important self-study committee, who then looked at the school and our pros and cons, our weaknesses and strengths, and wrote it all up for an official visit from a U.S. Department of Education accredited body who came and liked what they saw. Of course, it wasn't perfect. No one is. And we still had work to do in many areas, but they gave us full accreditation. And now people can get student loans and actually study to become doctors of naturopathic medicine, which really, really is one of the only disciplines where at the get-go, you actually train in holistic medicine. You know, there's many holistic doctors out there who are wonderful. We had Dr. Hunenhocke on last couple weeks ago, and he's a medical doctor who kind of learned about these naturopathic things after his training and became an expert in them. But, you know, I applaud people doing that, but it's a lot harder. I would rather go to school and start from the get-go and be immersed in the philosophy of science of holistic medicine. And now it's available right here on the East Coast.
It is, and it's cutting edge, and so much is going on in evidence-based natural medicine. It's really exciting. We've been doing it for years, but any kind of condition that an individual might be struggling with always has some kind of support from natural medicine, and more of it is being evidence-based. So I'd like to tell our listeners that they are invited to a conference that you and I are lecturing in, as well as several other preeminent lecturers, and this is on October 6th from 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. It's going to be held at the University of Bridgeport, and it's called Evidence-Based Natural and Integrative Medicine Symposium. And one of the things that's so great about this symposium is that you can get 5 CEU credits. And it's very, very reasonable.
We all have to do that to keep our license. If you're a nurse, doctor, dentist, osteopath, chiropractor, naturopathic doctor,
acupuncturist.
Yeah, we all have to take
psychotherapist,
various things like that. So this is a good opportunity to learn from top-notch people about alternative medicine.
And I'm going to talk about some of the lectures that will be given that day. And also, if you're just somebody from the community who's interested in learning the top information, you don't have to be a professional to attend. So if you are a professional, you can request the CEUs. But if you're a community member just interested, this is going to be high level, though. The development of the program is for professionals, but it's actually open for anyone to come and learn. And perhaps they'll get motivated to become a naturopathic physician or to come and be a dental technician or many of the wonderful programs that are available through the University of Bridgeport. So we're going to have one exact topic on that called Integrating Conventional and Holistic Practices in a Community Health Setting, because that is really, Dr. Z, the wave of the future. And then I will be lecturing on pharmaceutical drug nutrient depletions. You know, every single pharmaceutical drug that is used depletes nutrients. And everyone who's on any kind of pharmaceutical medication should know which nutrients they can expect to have depletions of, so they can supplement with foods high in that nutrient and or supplementation that offsets the depletion due to the pharmaceutical drug. So
this
that's
is very
what
important, Dr. Kamen, because, you know, in medicine, the understanding still is that you can get all your nutrients from your diet. And, you know, that might be so if you had a perfect diet and you were doing, like, you know, greens and eating or totally organic. But even still, a lot of it has to do with, you know, our assimilation of nutrients, and then at the cellular level, are our cells able to uptake these, or do we have toxic loads that require more nutrients than not? So there are many pulls, or, you know, the body needs these things, and just getting it from your diet is not enough. And add to that being on pharmaceuticals. This is why I think your topic is just fabulous. I can't wait to hear that one.
And then we have Dr. Raja Jaber, who will be lecturing. She is an MD from Stony Brook Medical School. I am a clinical instructor in the Department of Family Medicine at Stony Brook Medical School. And there I lecture to both residents and physicians on this same topic, which is the evidence based natural medicine, the way studies are supporting the use of diet, supplementation, herbs, homeopathics, in terms of actually healing all kinds of illnesses. And Dr. Raja Jaber, who is a medical doctor, will be discussing nutritional therapies for inflammatory bowel disorders. And as I'm sure you know, Dr. Z, and perhaps our listeners know, that chronic illness is so often linked to the gut.
Right. It's a big topic I'm doing at another conference, which is the Restorative Medicine Conference in San Diego in September, about 6-7 weeks away. And again, I'm talking about rheumatology because that's something that you and I are pretty interested in and have written and researched it tremendously. But what we're finding more is that it is linked to many species of bacteria living in the body. Some of them cause overt infections. Some of them don't cause infections. Some of them live in the gut. Some of them live in your teeth. Some of them live in the vaginal area, and some of them live other places. Some of them are stealth, meaning they're flying under the radar, but we still see evidence of their destruction and the upregulation of the immune system. And, of course, medicine, being that some of these are stealth bacteria, they're not really looking for this because the patient often is asymptomatic, meaning they don't have symptoms of these infections. And when we look for these bugs, we find them, and there's certain causality that we've been able to demonstrate. And eradication of some of these infections does lead, believe it or not, to a cessation of the autoimmune disease. That's really amazing, especially
when...
Well,
now that you brought that up, Dr. Z, let me just chime in that Dr. David Brady, who is a provost at the University of Bridgeport, he will be talking about autoimmune disease, leaving the era of reaction and entering the new proactive era of prediction. And, you know, this is such cutting-edge, evidence-based medicine, the way medicine should be practiced. This is not alternative. This is not New Age. This is good medicine, according to the latest science. And Dr. Brady will review exactly what you just discussed, Dr. Z, the current evidence-based approaches and the evaluation of GI microbiota, which is not being done in conventional medicine. But if people were to come and see you as a naturopathic physician, it would be done. And then we do look at how can we lead a healthier life by reversing that dysbiotic problem.
Yeah, we're kind of on a parallel path. It's kind of interesting because we're not collaborating at all on our talks, but we're discussing similar things with a little bit different of approach, of course. I'm doing mine at the Restorative Medicine Conference. Of course, he's doing one at this conference in Bridgeport, but it's very interesting some of the stuff we're turning up on restoring good balance, you know, as far as the immunological system, of which much of it is in the gut. And, you know, we've known about that for many, many years. We've talked about we actually coined the term, you and I, plant dibiotic, and it was then, you know, trademarked by some company, but nonetheless, you and I came up with it brainstorming, because the idea that plants can restore balance to the flora of the body and help with both this whole concept of dysbiotic organisms, which is kind of a new word, not even in the medical dictionaries yet, but dysbiotic, coined by people like Dr. Bland and things like that, mean that normal bacteria, which normally don't cause trouble, cause trouble under certain situations, and they should be looked at, as far as the gut goes, like Dr. Jaber's talk, they should be looked at even if they're not the bad pathogenic bacteria that medicine has for many years associated with GI enteritis and infections like Campylobacter and Shigella and Yersinia and various staph and strep. These are the bad guys that we kind of all know about. But we don't know about the probiotics and the healthy balance of bacteria in the gut and how much of an influence they're having on our health. And that's the type of thing that Dr. Brady and Dr. Jaber will be talking about. So that's really cutting-edge stuff.
It is.
And even though it's based on, how many years has our ancestors been eating yogurt and taking probiotics? And I remember when I was a teenager watching those Danone commercials, not that I like Danone, but anyway, the idea of eating yogurt and restoring balance in the colon and it being somehow linked to longevity because these Soviet Georgian people were very old and very healthy. I remember one guy on the commercial, he was like in his 80s and his mother was there who was well into her hundreds. They
right.
looked thriving. You know, the point is, good bacteria, I think, are very critical. It's just like your lawn, Dr. Kamai. It's just like the rainforest. It's just like any ecosystem. And then I'm talking about, speaking of ecosystems, I'm talking about new discoveries of medicines from the rainforest.
Yes, I can't wait to see your talk as well. You're going to discuss the folklore, ethnobotany, phytopharmacognosy, and modern research of medicinal plants found in the tropical regions of the world. And we're going to then follow, that will be on that same day, that is October 6th, save the date. You can go to naturalnurse.com and just look at schedules, and there's a link right to exactly how to go ahead and get your CEUs, join us for that day, register to be one of the people that are, we're only taking 125 people, and guess what, Dr. Z, we have a lot of people already registered for that class.
No, so, that's great.
Yeah, it's moving along, and people are excited to be able to get CEUs locally and hear so much great information. And then, of course, you're talking about these plants, and if people do get interested, they can join us, as many PhD nurses did join you last year, and many people over the last 20 years, to our Echo Tours for Cures directly to the island of Jamaica, which will take place in March. And this year, we're very excited to be able to offer that as part of a Ancient Global Studies class, which is a registered course at Stony Brook University.
Well, it's very exciting to share with people one of my real keen interests, going to various cultures and studying their herbal discoveries and then looking to see if indeed these are promising alternatives. And I'm telling you, some of the ones that we've actually found and I'll be talking about are very promising. One of them is a very close cousin to sort of like garlic and horseradish, kind of in between. When you smell this stuff, they call it guinea hen weed. And interestingly enough, there's some Jamaican researchers that have looked at this and they're planning some clinical trials to further other trials that have been done as a powerful tool against prostate and breast cancer. Because these chemicals found in this guinea hen weed, And guinea hens, as you know, are like, you know, kind of hens that run all around the place and eat ticks and bad bugs and till up the soil like the local people would have. I know local neighbors up where I live in Connecticut that have guinea hens.
So you know what, Dr. Z, we're going to take a little break right here.
Yeah.
And what they're going to feature is one of our natural medicine chests, which we have an amazing story to share with our listeners about how these came into being.
Right.
And when we come back, we'll continue our discussion and really do a focus on some of the herbs that you put together into some very specific formulas, such as Phytodyne and Amphoteric, and what those terms mean.
Okay.
So we'll be right back right here on The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z. This is Ellen Kamai, The Natural Nurse.
Dr. Z, stay with us.
On this edition of The Natural Medicine Chest, we'll explore the medicinal properties of the plants of the ephedra genera, focusing on the traditional Chinese ephedra, also known as mahuang.
Many species of the plant ephedra are used today in medicine throughout the world. The most medicinal of these are ephedra sinica, or Chinese mahuang, and ephedra nevadensis, also known as Mormon tea. Most of the research on ephedra has been performed on mahuang, whose stems and branches have been used as a traditional Chinese medicine for over 5,000 years in the treatment of asthma, hay fever, bronchitis, as well as the common cold.
Ephedra species are erect evergreen shrubs which grow in segmented bamboo-like joints reminiscent of straw ending in thin wisps. They typically are desert plants preferring arid conditions on dry, rocky, and sandy slopes. The Chinese ephedra, mahuang, has earned an impressive reputation as a source of the alkaloid chemical called ephedrine. In the West, scientists became interested in the medicinal usage of mahuang after they isolated ephedrine and pseudoephedrine in 1923. Today, synthetic derivatives have become widely used in prescription and over-the-counter medications. In 1993, over 40 million prescriptions in the U.S. contained these alkaloids.
Ephedra and its relatives are considered to act pharmacologically as sympathomimetic compounds. This means that they stimulate the sympathetic part of our central nervous system, responsible for the release of adrenaline, which leads to the fight or flight response. Ephedra also affects the cardiovascular system by increasing the blood pressure and causes a relaxation and dilation of the bronchial smooth muscles in asthmatics. Ephedra can shrink the swelling of the delicate mucous membranes which line the respiratory system, thus drying up watery discharges, unstuffing clogged nasal and sinus passages which accompany colds, sinus conditions, and allergies.
In both animal and human studies, mahuang has been shown to accelerate weight loss. It has been shown not only to suppress appetite, but to increase the metabolic activity of the adipose or fat tissue. Therefore, ephedra's weight-reducing effects are most significant in individuals who have a low metabolic rate or a sluggish thyroid gland.
Mahuang is a powerful herb which, when abused, can cause some unwanted side effects. Ephedra should not be taken by those with high blood pressure, nervousness or anxiety, insomnia, cardiac conditions, or pregnancy. Studies indicate that when used in conjunction with other Chinese herbs in a traditional formula, mahuang does not have any of these effects and has remarkable beneficial effects on human health.
We recommend consulting a healthcare practitioner knowledgeable in the use of botanical medicine before using mahuang, so you can be further educated about its totality of effects. And before using herbal preparations with mahuang, check to see if you are sensitive to its effects by starting with the minimal dose and working up to a therapeutic dose. Logically, since ephedra is a stimulant itself, it should be used prudently with other stimulants, beverages, or drugs with stimulant effects. Again, consult with your natural healthcare practitioner.
So, listeners, remember mahuang, the traditional Chinese ephedra, and make sure to include it in your natural medicine chest. Thank you.
Okay, and we're back.
Yes,
there's
nice
more right here. So, Dr. Zig, let's talk about the history of how, you know, we made that before ephedra was taken off the market, and now it is back on, but only through a licensed healthcare practitioner such as yourself.
Yeah, and it's great to hear them resurrected. I'm glad that we're playing the shows here on Progressive Radio. Because it is progressive, we kind of, you know, warned people back then that, you know, these things should be used prudently, and I wish people would have listened to that. It wouldn't have ran into so much trouble. But nonetheless, of course, you know, like Paracelsus says, everything is poison, nothing is poison. It just, only the dose is important, which means that any very powerful herb can have toxic effects, but it also has very powerful medicinal effects. And we just need to know and teach our patients this stuff.
Yep, it's great. And it's very interesting to me because in terms of the FDA and the politics, which of course we have been focusing on the politics of natural medicine since we began our partnership way back in the 1980s. I mean, we started our first radio show, which is still on, Natural Alternatives, which is on another radio station, and that's still on, and that's been on. When did you start that show, Dr. Z?
Well, I started Natural Alternatives out in Seattle in the mid-80s, and then we switched it over to our University of Stony Brook station, and it's still airing there. So that's a nice one to listen to as well.
And it's been on quite a while.
Yeah.
Now, the thing is that when ephedra did cause a number of deaths, it was implicated in about 30 deaths. Now, that sounds like a lot, especially since, let's say, in 2008, not one single death was linked to any natural remedy, Dr. Z, and that's according to the Centers for Disease Control. And in that same time period, hundreds of thousands of deaths were directly related to the use of prescription drugs.
Yeah, and that stuff, that's not really blown out of proportion. You know, and any one death is, you know, obviously significant, clearly, to the person, the family, and loved ones, and society at large. But I think that, you know, herbal medicine is kind of judged with a double standard. Now, keep in mind that these folks using the ephedra, oftentimes the ephedra was mixed with other stimulants, and they were many times using them for weight loss, which is one of the uses of ephedra, although this was not the traditional use that the Chinese developed. This was a kind of a later manifestation, which they dubbed botanical bariatrics. Bariatrics is the science of weight loss. And back then, there were companies that were coming out with weight loss prescriptions, which involved ephedra and green tea and using some prostaglandin inhibitors like an aspirin or something like that, which allowed you to use less ephedra. But basically what you were trying to do is rev up the adipose tissue and try to get to the point where you were starting to burn fat by increasing your metabolism, similar to how you would burn fat by sitting in a hot sauna. The temperature in that case would be the one that would be causing your metabolic rate to go up, because every time, for every degree your body goes up Fahrenheit, your heart rate goes up by 10 beats a minute and your metabolism shoots up. So basically people were trying to take the fast way to weight loss. And unfortunately there were some problems because several patients took these things when they and by the way on their own without maybe screening these things with a physician. And, you know, unfortunately had bad consequences to those things.
That's true. But there's so many things that we have been involved with for all these years. And one of them is looking at what is the best way to address pain with natural remedies, because that is one of the oldest ancient arts of using herbs. And there's a great combination which combines willow bark, bromelain, boswellia, corydalis, ginger, Jamaican dogwood, turmeric, and skullcap. So I think that is really interesting because, you know, some of the most ancient texts talk about white willow bark. I'm reading a series of books. I just read the last in the series. It's called Clan of the Cave Bear. And this book series was written by an anthropologist who studied the use of herbs by ancient Cro-Magnon man. And even back then, there's documented evidence that white willow bark was used as a deterrent for the pain of aging. So I know that that's such an important thing, and you have other things that you can share about on a more scientific level and at this point in time.
Yeah, I mean, there's, like you said, whenever we got hurt, we want to rub things, we want to rub our skin. That's just like an innate response of getting injured. So why not use some herbal medicines that have been used for a really long time to rub in? So there are some topical things we can talk a little bit about, and then there are some things that we can take internally. Many of these things can actually be done both. For instance, you know, white willow bark has these active salicylates, but so does wintergreen oil. Wintergreen oil has been used for a very long time. Who knows? I don't really know the ethnobotany of who started to use it. I know it's a Native American plant, so I assume it began here. Somehow the Native people, when they ate this thing, this wintergreen, which is like a low-growing cousin to the blueberry, it's in the same heath family, noticed pain. It had a nice aroma, and they also noticed possibly that it was found in birch, and many species of willow has that nice wintergreeny smell. And then they noticed that it created some type of a analgesic response, helping with pain, and thus, probably, this is how people put these things together for good therapeutic outcomes. And then later on, the scientists looked at biomarkers and standardization, and they wanted to find products that had various salicin esters and other flavonoids and components, in this case, glycosides, which is the main part of white willow bark, the salicylate, and then which gets converted by our gut into salicylic acid, is very important to have probably a good gut bacteria to make that conversion. But nonetheless, this is how it is. But you can rub this on your afflicted joint or muscle or whatever and get good relief. Wintergreen is a good example of that. Wintergreen oil is found in almost every OTC pain thing. There's
now,
other ones that are very...
In this particular restorative formula, which is called Phytodyne, that's Phytodyne, that's a place where we see white willow bark, and it is used to take internally and combined with many other constituents that are highly active. And what does the word dyne, you know, like anodyne mean, is a general term?
Yeah, well, dyne comes from the word painkiller, pain, so it's an old Latin word. And anodyne is a substance that people would take to help them with the pain or help them manage the pain. Pain is very complex. You know, you have inflammation can create pain. Various neurological conditions can cause pain, i.e. the neuropathic pain that we see with, unfortunately, people with diabetes when their skin burns, or they have herpes zoster. So infection can cause pain.
How do you think it would work on something? A lot of my patients, you know, we always think of the patient of the day because I see patients on Long Island and you have your clinic in Connecticut. Mm-hmm. And I have someone come in, many people lately for some reason, with carpal tunnel syndrome. Do you think it would be helpful for something like that or just palliative?
Well, I think it would help reduce some of the neurological pain. Yeah, I think it would be helpful. And then I would also use some topical things for carpal. There was a study, I believe, on using menthol, peppermint oil with various types of neurological pains, and it was very effective. So you'd probably, in that case, want to do something topically as well as internally to help manage the pain while you're trying to either solve the structural problem or heal the nerve, support the nerve with, say, Hypericum, St. John's wort, or maybe some nutrients and amino acids that seem to help with that. B vitamins seem to help repair nerve damage like that. So with, you know, with carpal tunnel, it's often repetitive nerve damage. The person works in a field where they're constantly using these things. In that case, they're probably going to need some physical therapy. But I would do all those things before I had surgery, that's for
right,
sure.
Right, that was going to be my next question, because that seems to be the first thing that's recommended in mainstream medicine. Well, we're going to go for another break right here, Dr.
Okay.
Z, allow Progressive Radio Network, and we're so happy to be part of Progressive Radio Network at PRN.FM. You know, you can listen in. There's an app available. You can also call in if you're traveling anywhere in the world or in the country. You can call in and listen to the show, and we'll be right back with more right here on The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z. Welcome back once again to The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z. And we have been getting so many emails and Facebook hits. If you'd like to find us on Facebook, just go to Facebook, The Natural Nurse. And you can send a message to myself. You can send it to Dr. Z. And you can also go to our website. That's naturalnurse.com or drznaturally.com. That's drznaturally, all one word, .com. And on naturalnurse.com, click on schedules, and you will see all the details as well as links to join us on our many adventures. On August 16th, I will be giving an outside herbal identification walk, and that is at St. Joseph's Rectory, which is in Brentwood, New York. On October 6th, we have the conference we were talking about earlier, which is open to the public as well as professionals, 5 CEU credits for anyone who attends, and that is from 10 to 6 p.m. on Saturday, October 6th. Then on October 21st, we have our last Chinatown Herb Walk for the season, where we actually go to Chinatown, and it's really a day in another country, wouldn't you say, Dr. Z?
It's great, and we learn so much by traveling and meeting a lot of the Chinese physicians and touring some of the Chinese apothecaries, including where they actually boil the tea down, FDA level certification in some of these laboratories and apothecaries. And we'll also be joined by Master Ameni Harris, who's a Qigong master who's actually uses Qigong to heal people with many afflictions. You know, in China, Qigong is so important. Qigong is like an art of actually energy work and breathing. And it's such an integral part of that system of medicine that whole wings of hospitals are dedicated to Qigong, just like wings of hospitals to surgery, Western medicine, and herbal therapeutics in the traditional Chinese medical hospital. So you'll learn from some of the masters and have a great day in New York.
In addition, Dr. Z, Man Singh is going to come, and she is a very knowledgeable Chinese herbalist from 7 generations of Chinese herbalists. And actually, her grandfather was great royalty and very highly esteemed in terms of being a medical herbalist. And she joined us last time we did this trip, and took us to this restaurant where the entire menu is only in Chinese, so we needed her help. But what it was about was medicinal food matched to your weak area.
Yeah, it was great. Like, you can take, if you have weak qi in a particular area, digestion's weak, or whatever your need. There's actually something on the menu that often combined food with Chinese herbs and other, even Chinese animal products. Like I had deer antler and lamb soup or something like that. I can't remember, which was just amazingly good. And boy, I felt such a surge of energy from that.
I know. So it's going to be an interesting day. Yeah. Feel free to come with us on that trip. And we're also already taking registration for our 3-credit college course in global medicine, which is a trip to the Jamaican rainforest. And talking about that, Dr. Z, since we're looking at herbs that can be really excellent as an anodyne and which are included in the phytodyne remedy that we were discussing today, there is an herb from Jamaica that is combined into the formula called Jamaican dogwood.
Yes, that's one of the most powerful herbs in their pharmacopoeia in the West Indies. And this was actually not only used by the ancient Arawaks, who were the indigenous people living in the Caribbean island, and the Maroons, who came over, who knows when the Maroons came over. Some people believe they came over way before the Vikings and Christopher Columbus to Jamaica. But nonetheless, these herbs were discovered by these people and used for helping toothaches, menstrual cramps, neuralgia, sciatica. So there's another neuralgia remedy for maybe even using topical Jamaican dogwood rubbed into the carpal tunnel for your patient, Dr. Campbell. Jamaican dogwood was used both not only internally, but it has a long history of being used topically. Even in Chinese medicine, they use a related species, which they call Haitong Pi. And we see that in when we go down to Chinatown. And this can also be made into a topical medicine for injuries. You know, I've been studying quite a bit of this. Of course, you know, Dr. Kamai, I'm going for my black belt very soon.
Oh, congratulations.
A couple months, probably. Yeah. But, you know, as you get older, training for a black belt, it gets tougher on the body. So you have to find ways to help heal much faster. And if you get banged up or beat up, which is, you know, but nonetheless, there's a book called Tooth from the Tiger's Mouth, where the Chinese doctor in this reveals a lot of the ancient secrets that were used by the Chinese martial artists. And every school had their own trauma liniment and bruise liniment and what they called hit medicine, for getting, you know, whacked. And many of them included the cousin of this Jamaican dog with the Haitong Pi, as well as many other herbs. So I've been, this summer, my project is brewing up a lot of these recipes, not only from, I'm trying them on myself, and then, of course, interesting patients in this, but there's quite a bit of things. Now, also Boswellia, which is very common. People have heard about Boswellia, actually is another one that's used around the world. A lot of these, it's so fascinating. You go to various cultures, Dr. Kamai, and you find that they may call the herb a different name, but they're using the same thing, and they're not, maybe they're not talking to each other. So
that's such a good reason that if you're going to get serious in herbal medicine, you do want to learn genus and species. Because the local names, look at an herb like Devil's Claw, which, by the way, is also very helpful for arthritis. But there's so many different plants that are called that all around the world, and sometimes they're completely unrelated.
Yes, so it is good to know the Latin if you can key it out and understand these things. So, you know, for instance, Boswellia is called frankincense. This is even listed in the biblical works and ancient books, and it's also called gummy olibanum in the Chinese Materia Medica, and I'm sure there's a zillion other names for it besides Boswellia. There's Sanskrit names, because it's also very commonly used in India, and that's called Saigal Google. So yeah, if you heard these names, you might think that they were three different plants when they're actually all the same tree, which is again used for promoting the circulation of blood and qi, helping get rid of pain, reducing inflammation, used topically. And interesting about Boswellia, it's helpful in so many inflammatory diseases that there have been studies on osteoarthritis, rheumatoid arthritis, asthma, pain syndromes, ulcerative colitis, and Crohn's disease, all helping systemically for these conditions. And what combines these very, I mean, one has to do with the lungs, one has to do with the joints, one has to do with the gut, is inflammation and the whole concept of inflammaging, which is something that it seems like natural practitioners are uniting these various disciplines in medicine, gastroenterology, rheumatology, et cetera, uniting them by this common inflammatory hypothesis.
Which is being widely recognized in mainstream medicine as
finally.
Inflammation. Yeah, finally. We've been talking about it for 40 years.
How many, I remember years ago saying that Alzheimer's is due to inflammation. People were thinking, oh, you're crazy. And some people, and also saying that high blood sugar gives you inflammation. People said, wait, diabetes isn't inflammation. It has to do with high blood sugar. What are you talking about, Dr. Z? Hey, we have been vindicated in looking at this inflammation hypothesis. That's for sure. So other herbs that one can use. Another one that I love, and again, back to the ancient Chinese materia medica, is corydalis, which they call Yanhu Su.
That is, and you showed it to me growing that. I never saw the plant before.
Beautiful.
And you actually have it growing in your medicinal Chinese herb garden at the university.
Yeah. It's a kind of a cut. If people have bleeding heart in their, or columbine in their garden, this is a close cousin. It looks very similar to those. And, of course, Yanhu Su has some very interesting compounds, including something that they call THP, not to be confused with THC, which is another good thing for pain, by the way. But nonetheless, THP is a close cousin to morphine, and this thing helps you with the pain of morphine without you getting hooked on oxycodone or OxyContin and a lot of it's just horrible. I was watching the news yesterday and these doctors were being busted for overprescribing oxycodone and OxyContin to their patients. You don't need these narcotics. There are many things in Mother Nature, even though the opium poppy is from Mother Nature, but it's been bastardized and changed by humans and abused, unfortunately. These herbs don't seem to have those addicting properties like any of the opioids, and at the same time they're very helpful for pain, particularly fibromyalgia pain, which is something that we see quite a bit in today's society. It's a very common diagnosis. Would be good would be ginger. And
ginger is a great one topically. In our book, The Natural Medicine Chest, I love the recipe that we share.
We should play that one if we have it maybe next week or when one of us are on, we could play the one on ginger.
Yes, I have that one there. You know, they have about 10 of our Natural Medicine Chests right
great.
There at Gary Knowles Network. And if you take the ginger, everyone can try this one at home. Just have a grater and a ginger rhizome. You might call it a ginger root. It's the kind of ginger that you buy in the regular grocery store. And then you just grate it into a pot, add a little bit of water just to cover it, and warm it for a while so it pulls out the gingerols. Then I will usually take some kind of washcloth and put it right in that liquid and then put that around whatever area seems to have inflammation or pain. Another way to do it is to add in a thickener, even oatmeal or agar-agar, and put it on the skin as a paste and then wrap gauze around it. That works really well also.
In the journal Osteoarthritis and Cartilage, they did a randomized placebo-controlled trial of ginger and ibuprofen and found that it gave comparable pain relief and inflammatory relief as an ibuprofen. And they recently did the same thing with a close cousin to ginger, which we call curcumin or turmeric. Same family, not as spicy as ginger, turmeric, but it also can be used both topically. Now, the caveat with turmeric is it will stain your clothes, so anything that you use topical turmeric with, you have to be careful not to get it on some good clothes or whatnot. But if you're wearing sweats or something that can be really washed thoroughly, then there's no problem with that. And watch your bed sheets, too. I've ruined some bed sheets and got yelled at by my wife, Dr. Kamai, with some with some of my crazy poultices.
Did that happen with ginger? Because that's
no, it happened
light.
With the turmeric.
Yeah, well, okay, let's go back to talk about turmeric, because turmeric is incredible, because turmeric has that dark covering. When I was teaching a class in botanical pharmacognosy and we talked about turmeric and its excellent anti-inflammatory effects, one of the things I actually put on a test was one of the adverse effects of turmeric is that it permanently dyes your clothes if it gets on there. And that was the actual correct answer, believe it or not. And it sure does, but other than that, it's incredibly useful.
In the last minute, I just wanted to just make a quick comment, because I know we're running out of time, but one thing that we're finding is that many of these herbs that help people with pain also destroy pathogenic bacteria, and maybe there's a big connection between having pathogenic bacteria, like I mentioned, stealth infections, bad root canals, urinary tract problems that won't go away, where the patient keeps coming up positive on a urinalysis for bacteria, yet they can't find any problems, and they still have what they call a stealth infection. And one of those classic herbs, and I guess we'll end with this, is called Artemisia, Dr. Kamai. Now, the stuff I dug up on Artemisia was just fascinating. We know Artemisia is not only agreed upon by the World Health Organization, but highly respected in Africa for helping people with malaria. This is malaria that's resistant to quinine. And believe it or not, not only does it kill this, but Artemisia many times is in many anti-parasitic formulas. Well, it just turns out that Artemisia is one of the most powerful things for pain. And in my presentation I'm doing out in California, I actually found where in the cell structure in the inflammatory, what we call cytokines, which are the inflammatory chemicals, the Artemisia modulates and stops. So here's something.
All right, Dr. Z. Well, we got to end. So
yeah.
It was great doing the show together, and it was wonderful being with Progressive Radio Network. You can find out more at naturalnurse.com, and send us your comments so we can share with you what you want to learn about staying healthy. Until next time, this is Ellen Kamai, the Natural Nurse.
And this is Dr. Z, Dr. Eugene Zamperin, saying to stay healthy.
Stay healthy.
Bye-bye.